For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
I was, I think, a little bit more nervous about the cost. Than Matthew was.
I was looking at things with rose-colored glasses.
What?
I'm like, somehow, we're just gonna, it's just gonna happen.
It's gonna fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
You're gonna plant a tree and it'll grow money.
Yes. Or babies.
Yeah.
Don't you wish? Or it would be even better if we could just have sex and then have babies.
Seriously.
I know.
Like, what the hell? Well, hello, all you gorgeous folks. Welcome to this bonus episode of the Queer Family Podcast. This show all about family, but with gay. This show whose mission is and always has been to uplift, highlight, normalize, and celebrate our beautiful LGBTQIA+ families in all their glorious splendors and identities. And this episode right here is doing just that. I sat down and I talked with Michael and Matt, aka Michael and Matt, on social media. They're kind of social media famous. And they also just started a podcast titled Who's Your Daddy, in which they chronicle their journey to parenthood. Let me tell you something. It is a journey and they are on it. They are on a roller coaster. They are on the roller coaster. You know what? That's all I'm going to say. You have to listen to find out. And they drop some exclusive info that nobody knows about yet in this here episode, in this here little bonus episode. And here's the beauty of this bonus episode. On the same exact day that this episode drops here, they're dropping right now. It's there. It's available right now. An episode where they interview me about my journey to parenthood. And I also drop some knowledge, some information that none of you know about yet. And it's pretty big info. So you're going to want to, right after you finish listening to this, you're going to want to head over to Who's Your Daddy and take a listen to today's episode. Just do it, you know, right after. Like, what else do you have to do today, right? You don't have anything else to do. Just listen to the podcasts all day. And while you're at it, rate, review, subscribe them. Yeah. Then go ahead and share them with your friends and family, especially the straight ones, because why not? Okay. Before I roll this tape, I do want to get into our Queer Conundrum segment. I have a new entry in it. Our Queer Conundrum segment, for those of you who are just tuning in, is where we share, listeners and myself alike, where we share those queer conundrums we face as queer families out here in these straight streets, as you will. The little things that only us queer families know about, the sometimes comical, sometimes very much not comical realities we face out there in the world. And so this one is coming in from an anonymous listener. I'm going to read you a bit of it, and then we're going to have a little laugh. This one's a bit comical, but also a bit sad too, as a lot of times these conundrums are. That's why it's called a conundrum. All right, so I am a Florida-based trans dad who has two young sons, both of whom have ADHD, and one is autistic. Recently, the state passed a trans bathroom bill. And I decided that I should probably take them to family bathrooms if we're out and about, because sometimes I need to direct them to do things and my voice is not read as masculine enough. Ugh, I'm so sorry for that. That sucks, right? And because of the kids' rigidity, my wife and I decided we should have an age-appropriate conversation with them about why I am not taking them to the men's room like I normally would. Very normal thing for us to face. And then it gets a little comical in our queer conundrum way. You're right. Flash forward to me being at like a big box retailer and they didn't have a family restroom. So of course, our friend had to take the kids into the men's room. And of course, as the kids do, the kids, because they had just had this very important talk with these beautiful, beautiful, beautiful children, were like, yeah, loudly asking over the whole time they were in there, are you even allowed in here? Are you going to get in trouble? Why are you in here? You know what I mean? So like, this is such a queer conundrum. This is like one of those things where the thing backfires because you're so open with your kids and you're trying to explain the whole situation, and kids' minds are kids' minds. And thank you for sending that in. What a beautiful conundrum. And also, I'm so sorry you have to face that, right? Conundrum. Please, please, please send in your queer conundrums because they're so fun. First of all, they're important to talk about, and they're also fun to share these stories that really just our queer families face. So send them in. I want to hear more of them. The number is 646-470-1840. I would love a voicemail too, because you can call in and leave a voicemail. You can also text if you want to remain anonymous, but a good voicemail is great. And then everybody can hear your beautiful voice, only if you want to. All right, it's time to roll this tape. My editor is already thinking in his head, oh my God, she's going on and on. All right, we're going to do this, Gerson. Helen and Beulah, my lovely, lovely fake assistants, we're going to roll that tape, okay? All right, they're like being so sweet to me, my assistants who don't exist and who I still continue to look to the side for. They're not even there. There's nobody there. A window is there. That's what I'm looking at. Okay, Helen and Beulah, please roll that tape.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Michael and Matt.
Hello. How are you?
I am good. I'm just looking at your beautiful faces and so excited to hear your story.
Oh my God, I feel like ready. I still have like glitter in my hair. This last weekend was Pride in Portland.
Oh, disco dance party last night.
Where are you?
Portland, Oregon.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I know,
oh,
a late
I'm
Pride
so
weekend.
Jealous of your lives. I am very jealous of your young lives. So here's the deal. I don't want to give it away. You're going to give your elevator pitch. But Michael and Matt host this new podcast called Who's Your Daddy?
Yes.
And y'all have to go listen to it. I already told you, you have to go listen to it. But you know what? We're going to go right into this 30-second elevator pitch. And I am going to put a timer up. I am. But don't you worry your pretty heads off. I will never cut you off. And it doesn't matter if you run over. It's just a fun way to get to know who you are, Michael and Matt. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I am so nervous.
Don't be nervous.
I'm ready.
Okay. Okay. Are you ready? On your mark. Yes. Get set. Go.
Michael, go.
Oh, gosh. hi, we are Michael and Matt. I'm a Midwest boy who married a West Coast boy. We lived in Nebraska for like 4 years. It was a very big struggle, but we made it through. We ended up getting married in 2018. And a couple years later, we decided that we wanted to start a family. And we started looking at all of our options. And we landed on surrogacy, but there were very few resources out there. So
we decided to make a podcast about all of the non-traditional paths to parenthood.
Exactly.
We're going through the process now. So we're actively discussing it while we're going through it. And I'm done.
And we're here.
Boom. Okay, you went slightly over, but I'm not holding that against you.
Stock the points.
Were we the most nervous elevator pitch guests so far?
Not at all. Not at all.
Just run on high anxiety.
It's so funny. I shouldn't say this because you're going to interview me, but people who interview me like turn it back on me without me knowing. And they're like, why don't you give us an elevator pitch? And then I realize how nerve-wracking it is. So I apologize.
I'm going to ask you that tomorrow. Yeah, I love this.
I really just did that. Okay. All right. So Michael and Matt, you are going through the process literally in real time, and you're basically documenting it, which I freaking love. I think this is great. Honestly, I started my baby making process. We started it 10 years ago for our first, and there was nothing then, nothing, which is why this podcast came about gradually. the truth is there is more out there now, but you still were like, we don't know what to do. There's so many choices and there's not enough resources for us. So now here you are showing up, being visible and becoming a resource for so many others out there. So kudos to you.
I feel like we just sat down and we were like, we need a way that we can have longer conversations about surrogacy and about all of this, because like we don't talk enough in depth as a couple when it comes to these things. I feel like we're like doing our own research and figuring things out. And then we come together and we're like, wait, what are we doing?
Wait, what did you find out?
So even like being able to sit down and do a podcast and talk to other people who are experts and who do know a lot about surrogacy, like you, who's experienced so much from this industry, and being able to share that information, I think is like super important.
Yeah. And I think we knew we had followed a few people that had gone through surrogacy and adoption online. But I think what I was noticing is I was like, oh, I see the end result, but I'm like, not really sure how they got there. We can individually talk to them. And we were like at the beginning talking to different people. But then I was like, wait, this is like, we're like learning so many things. This is valuable information. Maybe in some way we can help like gather it and then like concentrate it and help other people who are like going through these processes.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful what you're doing. And I think that you're going to help a lot of folks. Let's talk through this, because as we know in queer family building, so many decisions to make. So let's take it back. You met, you fall in love. Did both of you, see, like we take it all the way to the very beginning. Back. Did both of you always know you wanted kids?
Yeah, I think so. When we sat down at one of our first dates, the topic came up. Michael comes from a really big family. He has seven
very,
siblings.
Very, very big family.
I think 24 nieces and nephews now.
Yep. Oh, as of a couple weeks ago, 24.
So like family life was kind of an essential part of for you growing up.
I was the seventh of eight children. So like, I was never not surrounded by chaos. I became an uncle at the age of 14. I was like babysitting, like caring for children on my own when I was like 14, 15, 16, when like my siblings needed a sitter.
He carries a baby like a football.
Like, he just does that used to it. Babies. It's just like, yeah, it's just second nature, like, sort of.
Amazing.
And I just, yeah, I mean, all seven of my siblings have kids. And so it was just, I've seen it modeled multiple times and I just always had that in my mind. But obviously coming out, you know, you're like, this is it's going to be different.
This is where I was going to go.
And I was never like, it's not going to happen, but I just knew that it was going to be different.
I wasn't sure for me. I was more like, I didn't know if I was ever going to be in a long-term relationship or have somebody who I like fell in love with. Mm. I went to school at a private Christian university in Seattle. So I was very much like praying the gay away, being a good Christian. And I dated women through most of college, and I didn't come out until towards the end of my junior year. So things started to change then. But even so, I didn't really see myself in like a long term relationship until I met Michael. And then I was like, oh, this feels different.
It's just so interesting. Right. And I think maybe it's where we grew up sort of thing. I don't know if like being in a large city had any impact on that. But in the Midwest, it's just like you go, you grow up, you go to college, you get a job, you get married, you have kids. I don't know. It's just like that's just the model. And so I guess I was just like, it's going to be different, but I'm going to figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. This is something that we think as soon as we realize, okay, all right, no, I really am queer. This is who I am. Like, was the moment we really realize it, then it's, okay, what's my life going to look like? And all these questions just start popping up right away because we have so many questions to answer in regards to that. And even like with you, Matt, like you weren't even sure you were going to be in a long-term relationship because it sounds to me like possibly it wasn't represented in your world.
Wasn't modeled.
Right? Right. Yeah. No,
right?
It wasn't.
And that's why visibility really matters so much. Right. But like, you go through that process, even in your youth. Okay, I don't know if kids are in the making for me, or I do definitely, I'm going to figure it out. So you're there, you meet each other, fall in love. And then when does the conversation about making a family come into play together?
I think it comes into play pretty soon after we get married. But it wasn't like a, we need to figure this out right now. It was sort of like a, well, what are our next steps? And my next step was always like, we need a house first. Just, I'm like, I don't want to rent. I don't want to like have a child and then we move like when they're like one or two and we're like trying to move everything. It just seems like
it was so funny because like when these conversations came up, Michael was like, nope, we need to do this first, this second, this third. It was
there's a
prioritization.
There's a formula. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not alone in that.
Yeah. First step for me was house. And then once we got the house, it was like, okay, like when do we feel like this is going to be a good time for us?
I was going to nursing school at the time.
Right.
So it was kind of like we wanted to get through school, figure that out before we kind of like started the process officially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then that was, we started looking into things more seriously.
You finished
kind of like doing our research and interviewing agencies and trying to figure out like, what are we doing? Where are we going with this?
And so then it was like, okay, nursing school is done. We have our house. And so then it sort of just led into that 2022.
Okay. And was it like you knew you were going to do surrogacy?
No.
No.
So yeah, what was that conversation?
We were bouncing around quite a bit. Man, we do want to do foster care and foster to adopt. We know people in our lives who have gone through the process and we talked in depth with them about kind of like what their experience was like. And I mean, we've been watching from the sidelines in some way too, because your sister did foster to adopt.
Exactly. And just like pragmatism, I think, or things that I've seen modeled, right? So all seven siblings, straight, cis, and they've all had kids through natural processes, right?
What's wrong with them? What's wrong with them?
I know, seriously.
So boring.
We'll forgive them.
So unfortunate.
But one of my sisters, had a rather like traumatic miscarriage that just took like a really big toll on her.
Oh.
And I think she just felt in her heart like she needed to have, you know, or she like, she wanted that like that fourth kid kind of, I think, just to round everything out. And they found some genetic stuff, which that led, you know, they thought led to that. And so instead of trying again on their own, they're very well to do. And they were just looking around and they were like, we could totally like do this. Like we could totally give a kid that otherwise wouldn't have a stable situation, a very stable situation and like a super loving family. We have three kids already. So I saw that model, then I was like, I don't know. And we had friends literally going through foster care like while we were deciding and we were watching their journey as well. Yeah. That was just such a roller coaster. It was so unpredictable.
Pretty traumatic.
And even like
the situation that they're like kind of involved in.
Like almost the perfect situation that was handed to them still got taken away. And I was like, I just don't know. We were traveling a lot. I was like, I just don't think we're set up for foster care.
There's a few things going on. I mean, I was starting my first job out of nursing school. Working a lot, both of us were working a ton, and then on the weekends we were doing our travel because we also do a lot social media stuff in the LGBTQ travel space, and that's still like an ongoing business. So like knowing that we do travel so much currently, it was kind of like this decision of like, well, we can't necessarily cut out all of our work either on the medical side of things or through our like at home business and traveling, doing that. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had to make the decision of like, we can plan in advance to have a kid, but we can't really take in for foster care right now.
Right. Yeah. And you have to know, I mean, you have to know yourself and you have to know what you're capable of, especially when it comes to fostering, because you could get a baby. Like once you're approved and stuff, you could get a child.
Right. And like tomorrow.
The next day, like there could be a child in need and, you know.
And I think a lot of things that we were also seeing, like we had seen a lot of just people that we knew online who had done surrogacy. Again, we had seen it modeled. And I had seen maybe a couple people that had kind of talked about their story of adoption. But I think we just were like, wow, I think this is maybe more,
it looked more straightforward.
Maybe,
or there was like a step-by-step straightforward. Straightforward. a step-by-step where you could just go through it and you know, like you can get from point A to point Z somehow. And we thought we would have some kind of semblance of control over it all. That is a lie.
I was always, I mean,
Lesson in parenthood right there.
No
first
control.
Lesson in parenthood.
I know.
No control.
No control at all.
As these roads to queer parenthood go, surrogacy seems at least like you got a checklist to check off, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's there is a roadmap with steps that you can kind of check off. Whereas I think foster care, foster to adopt and adoption, somebody else is sort of like, you know, helping you with that process or facilitating that process. But ultimately, at the end, you don't know what's going to you don't really know what's going to happen.
I guess it seems more unpredictable, but it's really not. Like, they're all unpredictable.
Yeah, they're all unpredictable, honestly. Yeah.
Because, they're all roller coasters.
Yeah,
which is why we need more podcasts about it.
I know.
Once you start this roller coaster, oof, you take some twists and turns, don't you?
Yeah, you definitely do.
Yeah.
So, so you really contemplated foster to adopt, and then you said, okay, no, that's not going to work. We think we're going to do surrogacy.
To start, yeah.
That's an expensive route. So,
incredibly.
What was the conversation about cost and like, how are we going to do this? And walk us through it.
I was, I think, a little bit more nervous about the cost than Matthew was.
I was looking at things with rose-colored glasses. Well, I'm like, somehow, we're just going to, this is just going to happen.
It's going to fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
We're going to plant a tree and it'll grow money.
We're babies.
Yeah.
Don't you wish? Or it would be even better if we could just have sex and then have babies.
Seriously.
I know.
Like, what the hell?
I was just kind of like, we're just going to start it and somehow it's all going to come together.
I think.
Yeah, right.
I also feel like in Matthew's life, people have presented him with challenges that have been like, oh, you can't do that. Or like, oh, that's too hard.
Please,
or that's too expensive.
Do tell me about my life.
I feel like that's what happened. You've said that about your parents. You're like, it's too expensive to do this. You're not going to be able to go to Europe this many times. Or like, you can't just do whatever you want. And then I feel like he takes that as a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
tell me something I can't do. I take that
he's
as
like,
a challenge.
Nope, I'll do it. I'll figure it out.
Okay. And you find a way.
So I don't know if it was like, oh, well, surrogacy is so expensive. And he was like, oh, no, it's
fine.
We'll find a way. So I think he was like a little bit more like, no, I want to do surrogacy. And I was like, I could go either way. That one's real expensive.
Right.
But like, I'm sort of 50-50 on it. So if you are feeling more passionate about surrogacy, fine. That tips the scales a little bit. And like, let's try it out. Let's go for it. So I think that's kind of where we were at. Then also saying like, we're still interested in then doing adoption or foster or both. I'm not, you know, who knows how
I felt like it was either like
crumble.
We start surrogacy or we delay on everything on all fronts for a while. So it was kind of like a feeling like I want to start now. I want to start the process now because I know just how long that it can take on any of the fronts. So let's like, I don't know, get the wheels turning and see what we can do and hope for the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what was your first step?
Research. Google was the first step. Google.com.
Yeah.
You heard of it.
Just like researching, like, how do you do this? Like, what do you need?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were like, oh, it looks like people use agencies. So we're like, oh, maybe we need a surrogacy agency. Oh, we need an IVF clinic, right? Because we need somebody to do all the science background of it. Oh, and then that surrogacy agency will help us find a gestational carrier. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then that will hopefully lead into, you know, all of the legal things. And so, but we were like, okay, first we need to do agency and clinic, right? We get an agency and clinic. Great. We'll be off to the races. And they're going to help us figure out all the things. So it was interviewing and calling different agencies. Well, and first you have to check to see if they work with gay people or queer couples.
Right. That's a whole thing. So how did you vet them?
Matthew did a lot of the vetting, so I'll let him.
I looked up questions of like, what do you ask surrogacy agency? What do you ask an IVF clinic? And then I wrote a list of questions. Michael and I discussed it, like what's really important to us. Mm-hmm. And a big thing I was looking at was cost, just overall. I've heard a lot of surrogacy agencies and IVF clinics can be a little bit more expensive in California and especially along the coasts. So that was just like something I had heard. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Things are more expensive on the coasts. Usually.
Well, and I grew up in the Midwest. And so I was like, yes, everything is more expensive on the coast. Like everything is cheaper in the middle. Everything's cheaper in the middle.
So we're like, okay, cool.
From experience.
Yeah.
And another thing that was important was just availability of egg donors and gestational carriers. There was a lot of jumps or assumptions that we made. And it was kind of like, we've heard and learned that so many people flock to Oregon to do surrogacy, and from other countries, like it's a hot spot.
Why is that?
Such an interesting question, because as we looked into it more and more and more, California has the best laws in regards to surrogacy or assisted reproductive technology and all that.
Mm-hmm. Like the most like protective laws.
Yes. And mean, like just, right. Well, and when you look at it, it's like, do they have laws on the books? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, do they even have anything written down that addresses
have
this?
Have they thought this through? Right.
Exactly. Totally. And some states, it's like, they just have nothing on the books. So it's not illegal. It's not, you know, you can't be like penalized, but they also don't have any protections. California has the most protections, but it's also California. Everything's the most expensive in California.
Right.
Oregon has like okay laws, like nothing bad, but they're not quite as forward thinking as California, which I was like, maybe then they're just like, oh, Oregon, it's going to be a little less expensive than California. Mm-hmm. And it's still a very liberal state.
Potentially that. And I think the reputation goes a long way. So I think the reputation in and of itself, that Oregon is a liberal hotspot and a super popular place to do surrogacy. And there are really good IVF clinics and surrogacy agencies here that have amazing reputations. So,
but we couldn't get an appointment with one just to have a phone call for 3 weeks, that agency.
3 months.
3 months.
Whoa.
So then we were like, oh my gosh, maybe it is being oversaturated and it's just going to be harder to do.
That was one of the red flags that came up for Oregon, where I was like, whoa, I can't even get like real a busy consultation.
And you're going to be spending all this money and you're going to be so deep into this process. You want the utmost attention. Like, you want to be able to reach your agency when you need to.
I wanted to talk to somebody that wasn't just a receptionist at the desk. Mm-hmm. To even like start the process, because I'm like, I'm just going to hold on to these questions for 3 months and kind of like dig deeper into this process and put more money into it without like any answers.
Right.
Like, whoa, I can't do that right now. This is scary.
Mm-hmm. So what'd you do?
So we had multiple interviews with a couple agencies in Washington, California. I think we're on the list for the Oregon one. I don't even know if we ever... Mm-hmm. Did you talk to them?
Yep.
Okay, so you got to talk to them. And then we had heard that Texas actually has weirdly good surrogacy laws and rather forward-thinking laws that actually are like pro-LGBT couples doing surrogacy in Texas.
Okay, win one for Texas. There you go.
Like, both fathers can be on the birth certificate.
Yeah.
And like, some insurances have surrogacy riders so that you don't have to buy a separate one.
Oh.
That's just what we've been told, right? And so we looked into it, and then we were like, we had found this agency and this IVF clinic in Dallas. The doctor that we spoke to was gay and going through IVF with his husband at that exact time.
So it just gave us good vibes all around.
And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is a sign, right?
Feels good.
Everything that a lot of the way they were speaking about things was just like, oh yeah, totally. You can do a single one. You can do a double embryo transfer. Like, we can find a surrogate who will do that. No problem. It's going to be so much cheaper here in Texas than it will be in California or Oregon or Washington. And so we were like, okay, well, you know, availability of people, lack of potential like competition. I don't know that many people are thinking Texas immediately when they think like reproductive health.
That was another thing that, like, when we were doing our research, is when I was looking at a egg donor, what's it called?
Like a database, profiles? Essentially.
Databases, profiles. When I was looking at those in Oregon, it was kind of few and far between, and it was a lot going into Idaho and Washington. And there wasn't a lot to be seen for like a large amount of available egg donors in Oregon. However, when I started looking in Texas, it looked like there were a lot more in a very like small area that were available. And so I was just kind of like looking at that and thinking, okay, if we're going to start the process, we're going to start with egg donation. Let's see if we can kind of like figure out where we can find our potential egg donor. And so that led us to Texas.
And because you want to use the egg donors that your agency has available, right? You want to keep it all in-house at this point.
Yep. I wanted to have all of our...
Or IVF clinic.
Yes, but I wanted to have right. everything kind of like in one area instead mm-hmm. of trying to like spread it out across the country.
As we talk about this, it doesn't sound weird.
Sounds like it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of the things that we were doing and thinking like logistically, I'm like, yeah, this kind of makes sense.
I think the big kicker was though that it is across the country. Yeah. Like that is really far away for us.
Yeah.
And to think about, like, it's not a big deal, you know, to do the egg donation and the embryo creation there. I think, like, that's fine. But the thought of, like, having a gestational carrier in Texas mm-hmm. or even mm-hmm. just having your team of people so far away and not mm-hmm. being able to go to the IVF clinic here or to the surrogacy agency here, as we've kind of like continued on the process, we felt that distance, that geographic distance where we're just like, wow, that's really far away. And mm-hmm. we got to the point where we're like, no, we do want a gestational carrier in state or close by. Mm-hmm. That's pretty important to us for this process.
Mm-hmm. And that can be hard. That can mm-hmm. definitely be hard to find. Yeah. We need to pause because we like everybody at home. The listeners know, and maybe if you're a new listener and you're not a queer person and you're hearing this, the amount of thought and intentionality and planning yeah. that goes into these family building journeys. Like, mm-hmm. like you're still in your process. Like, yeah. I don't know how far you are into it, right? But like already we have talked for like 10 minutes just about this decision because thinking. So much mm-hmm. goes into every single step of the way. And I just want to highlight that. I like to highlight those things because
yeah.
God, we go through it. We really go through it. We're so intentional, mm-hmm. right? Okay. So what did you do? Where'd you go from here?
So we did end up signing with an agency in Dallas.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Who worked very closely with a fertility clinic also in Dallas. Uh-huh. We're feeling very positively about that. We went down, or we found our egg donor through our agency.
What was that like? What was it like, that donor search? I call it the search for Superman or the search for Superwoman in your case, right? You get crazy. You get crazy.
It was a lot of just like scrolling profiles. Uh-huh.
It's like dating.
Kind of considering, yeah, kind of considering.
And I listened to your story about like how difficult it was for y'all to settle on yeah. a sperm donor. And mm-hmm. for us, I don't know, it seemed, we did not get so caught up in that. It was kind of like, did they seem fine? Great. But our biggest thing was like, we want to talk to them.
Yeah.
Right.
That was our big thing.
And you get that with egg donors. We don't get that with sperm donors.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Sperm banks. So it's literally like, look at their pictures, read their stuff, you know. But this is, so I wanted to ask you, like, is this an yeah. open egg donor situation where you get to know the person before you choose the person? Like, how did it work out for you?
So we had a Zoom call with two potential egg donors. So we went through the whole thing. We had found like two that we were interested in, did a Zoom call with both of them. But the second one, like, this, her profile was just like so immaculate, meticulous. She had written so much and they ask a million questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we were like, oh my gosh, I'm just already getting a good sense, you know, of how intentional she is about this process. Mm-hmm. And we were able to Zoom call and we just both got, I got just a very warm feeling. Like I almost felt, you know, like she could have been like a member of my family. Like that's who mm-hmm. I felt like I was talking to. Just her demeanor was so calm and like loving, and she just seemed so invested. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. afterwards we both felt like, I was like, I feel really good about that one. And then we just kind of sat with it for a little while. And then when we flew down to do our portion of the donation, we actually were able to set up a meet and greet, a lunch. And so we got to meet her in person.
Oh,
and she
wow.
was equally as lovely. We got to actually meet her daughter.
Oh, wow.
As well, just briefly, right, for a lunch. And then we got to like kind of correspond back and forth as she was doing like
oh, that
the
was
injections.
Super cool.
And
yeah.
we were trying to just, yeah, send her some encouragement.
But what we heard was that it was like super rare. Like that's not something that normally happens through
oh, really?
The surrogacy process. Most couples opt to not meet their or not talk to their egg donor
Right.
We were talking to a couple and they were like, ooh. And I was like, was that a bad idea?
Yeah. I was like, oh, did I make a mistake?
I think everybody is so different, right? But I think personally, I feel, and you know, to each their own, and there's no judgment, there's no shame in whatever path you choose. But I personally, I feel like if I have an opportunity of knowing more about my kids' donor, I want to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I understand your decision there. But I also understand folks' decision to not want anything to
100%.
Do with
that. Yeah.
That's a decision that needs to be made. And that's a deep conversation. And here we mm-hmm. go again with the intentionality and the planning. You know, it's one of the decisions. Mm-hmm. So you chose to get to know the donor, mm-hmm. which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then she went through it. She got some eggs,
mm-hmm.
yes,
produced some eggs.
Everything that happens through surrogacy, you can't control it. You can't control nature, biology. You can do as much as you can to help to put everything in the best scenario to have the best outcome, but you still can't control nature. So at the end of that egg donation and embryo creation, we ended up with 4 embryos on my end mm-hmm. and 1 embryo on Michael's end. Mm-hmm. And we do each want, we're hopeful to each have our own child at the end of this, mm-hmm. whether that's going to be through a double embryo transfer, one from each of us, or a single embryo transfer 2 times.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Sibling journey. Gotcha.
Sibling journey.
Yeah.
But, so that takes me to a question about the biological connection, because at first you guys were thinking, all right, let's foster or let's adopt. And now that you're at surrogacy, it seems like you both kind of do want to have that biological connection. So what is the conversation around that? I ask this of everyone because it's really hard for some folks and it's really not a big deal for others. So what's your thoughts?
It's such like a question that I'm like, I might be saying the wrong thing. Then that's
it can
that's
be heated
fine.
Or like walking along a balance beam.
But
you know,
for me, it's honestly like we are, I think like $75,000 into this process.
Oh my God. Yep.
And I have 1 embryo mm-hmm. that has a slightly lower chance of like implanting, not miscarrying, making it to full term. And so many people go through multiple embryo transfers, right? Because they fail. Mm-hmm. And I think it's honestly, unfortunately, like obviously we have his embryos and that's great. But like our plan, right, through this whole thing mm-hmm. was like to maybe at least have 2 or 3 each. And then when we call and we're like, what would it cost to do
another round of egg donation?
Another round of like egg donation and insemination. They still have, you know, our sperm and a couple vials, right? Because they don't use mm-hmm. all of it. And then the price tag is like $25,000-ish.
More.
Like, that would have to come out of our pocket. And I'm like, well, that's almost an entire adoption agency fee. Mm-hmm. So it's already so expensive. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it was a process. I think it's the completion of the process, right? Like we had this idea going into it. And then if we aren't able to achieve it, and it's not so much that it would have to be a biological tie. I think it would just be that like our goal is to have kids, obviously, number one. But also our goal was to see us, me reflected and him reflected.
And that's the thing.
And even though it's not the most important thing, it's one of those things that's in your mind. Like that part wasn't achieved, essentially.
This is something that's really unique to our families, right? So when you're going to go the adoption route, right? Mm-hmm. You're both not going to have a biological connection.
Yeah.
So it's like we're both in the same boat. But when you go a surrogacy route, or like in my wife and I's case, you know, like a sperm donor route, one of us is going to have a biological connection and one of mm-hmm. us is not, right? Then you're faced with this like, well, shit, if it's not me, like all of a sudden you're excited about this connection. And not everybody feels this way. I very much felt this way. I was having all kinds of feelings that my wife was going to go first. But this is something that is super unique to us, to queer mm-hmm. folks in this family building space. Like one of us has to be like, okay, if it turns out that I'm the one that doesn't have the biological connection, I have to get right with this, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And knowing that the child's going to have a biological connection to one of you and it might not be you. Mm-hmm. That's something that sometimes takes some personal
processing,
work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And we're not perfect, you know? Like,
no, well, I think
it's right. kind of like a natural thing to feel when I think, uncomfy about.
I think that it is very acceptable for a straight couple to feel that way, right? Mm-hmm. Because, oh my gosh, we've been trying. And then, but nobody, when they are like, we're trying, nobody's like, well, just adopt. You know what right. I mean? Because they're like, oh, well, no. You're straight. You're obviously supposed to have kids.
Right. Totally.
Right. And
totally.
And then they go into IVF and everybody's like, oh, it's such a struggle
you poor
for them.
Poor thing. I know.
And then we do IVF
be hard
and they're
for
like,
your husband. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we go through IVF and they're like, why are you doing all this? Like, just adopt.
You're
and
so then, selfish.
But it's like,
right. And they, it's not I think selfish.
It's, yeah, yeah. I think the, it's more acceptable because they're just assumed that they're going to be able to have biological mm-hmm. children.
They deserve it. They're more
and
deserving.
And they get IVF. And it's okay for them to have that, like, oh, we want a biological child for our own. But then when we do it, they're like, oh, it's such a hard process. Like, why are you doing it?
And you're so selfish. Yeah. And I just want to say, it is not selfish. And it is yeah. totally valid and normal to feel some type of way
mm-hmm.
about not having a biological connection. Yeah. And it's also yeah. totally valid and normal to feel some, to not feel some type of way about it and be like, nah, I don't care. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We run the gamut. So, you know, you just have to sit with your feelings and live with it. And also, you're going to have to get right with it possibly not being one of you. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
In an ideal Definitely. World, they both go in, you get the twins, one of each. Like, that's like, whoa. That's yeah. the beauty Amazing. Of the two dad family building journey, that you can each actually get one mm-hmm. in the same drop.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't always work out that way because science and nature and
right.
know.
It really is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So you're at this place where you've got the embryos.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have your surrogate yet?
We do not.
Oh, no, okay. no, no, we don't.
It is a long, long...
Deep in that search.
Long mm. searching, waiting process.
Uh-oh. What's going on?
So, yeah, that is like a big thing is that when you... Okay, so...
He's like, so let much. Me gather my thoughts.
I don't know.
It's so much.
It is. Mm-hmm. But you got to like consider that, you know, I, again, rose-colored glasses when I'm starting this thing, you know? I'm thinking like, all right, we're going to put some money here. We're going to put some money there. It's going to like shake around, do its little thing. And then like, we're going to somehow mm-hmm. come out the other end with a gestational carrier ready to go.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
God, no.
I know. You kind of have to go on in there with blinders to a certain degree, though.
Oh, like, yeah.
Because if you knew how hard it was going to be.
Totally.
Right? You know? Like, you yeah. And it might, you might get lucky and then boom, it really does work that way. So you never know.
Mm-hmm. And I think my biggest mistake or my biggest like thing that I didn't really realize going into this is just how much ability that we have to pursue this process ourselves or on our own because we just thought we knew we had to have a surrogacy agency and IVF clinic to go through this whole thing. And of course you have to have an IVF clinic for the science part. Like, of course, like we know
right.
that, but
which I think is like one of the things that we would have changed about our process is
yeah
we would have vetted just IVF clinics. We should have just vetted IVF clinics. Mm-hmm. And not thought about the location as much or the agency or like the surrogate part of it.
I think we're mm-hmm. trying to go way too far ahead and think about like, where can we get a gestational carrier fast enough? Or,
I think we tried to plan the whole process at the beginning.
Right.
When you should right. just start with the clinic and make sure that you have a successful science mm-hmm. to go forward with before you start sinking money into other things. Because we have a retainer, $16,000 retainer for our agency. And that money is
yeah.
out the door. We cannot use that to do more IVF stuff right now, you know? So
oh.
it's gone. And
right.
so now it's like, well, I have the one and we would have loved to have more, but
right.
we have already spent all this money that's going somewhere else. So,
right. So I you mean, have yeah. to move forward with what you have.
Yes.
I mean, we could always, yes. Unless we win the Powerball. So the Powerball is looking good right now.
Don't we all need that? All right. So you're like, you're just kind of between a rock and a hard place right now, like trying to figure out.
We felt that way months ago. Yes. Okay. When we were kind of like wrestling with this. I mean, we had some days where we're deep in conversation. We're trying to like figure this out. And we're like, what the hell did we do? What are we doing right now? Just like second guessing all of our decisions.
One of the best fertility clinics in Oregon is literally 5 minutes down the road. And I was like, oh. Are we just so stupid? Like, we should have just gone there and like had everything done here first. And anyways.
Yeah. But I mean, so hindsight, right? Learn as you go.
I think this is a hard process to go through without being like, oh, what if we did this? What if we did that?
Yeah, there's a big what if game that you can play. But mm-hmm. after we kind of like had our pity party, we
still in the pity party.
I basically like starting our podcast, that is what changed everything. I am telling you right now, because yeah. we got into That's these true. Conversations with others, and not just mm-hmm. simple conversations where I'm asking a few questions. We're having hour-long conversations with people who have gone through the entire process themselves, with experts, like people who know way more than we do. And like, holy crap, it completely opened our minds to how vast the non-traditional path to parenthood can be. And it's mm-hmm. not like there's one way to do it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so from it just kind of, we're like, epiphany. Whoa. We, right. like everything that we've done so far doesn't have to be what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
right.
like we can, we felt this like loss of control, kind of like powerlessness of we're just stuck in this money cycle and we can't really.
Just waiting for our agency to figure out the next step for us kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I was like, why? Why are we just sitting here waiting, feeling bad for ourselves? Like mm-hmm. right now we're at, well, yeah, we're just waiting to see if we get matched with a gestational carrier, and who knows how long that's going to be. Like, why don't we just start putting messages out there and seeing like if we can find someone ourselves?
Because and most of the people that we talked to,
that's what they did.
Who we saw, right. you know, they had successful surrogacy journeys. They got their singletons or twiblings. We started interviewing them and they were like, oh yeah, we just interviewed people on our own. We didn't have an agency. Like, we just did it independently. And we're like, what? You I thought everyone needed it.
Yeah. Well, I've spoken to a good number of folks who found the surrogates on their own as well.
Yeah.
Like one couple last season put something on social media and found their surrogate that way. And one of them, a sister-in-law stepped up, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The lesson I learned there was just be open about it and tell folks, and you just never know. You never know who's going to hear that and say, you know what? I want to help you. You just never know. But also know that that might not happen.
Right.
And, yeah. Right. And then there's also the thing that I think about that comes with an agency is like the legal side mm-hmm. and just like getting everything like zipped and buttoned up in the right way
mm-hmm.
in a simple way.
Yes.
Right. Whereas when you go off on your own, you need to make sure that you're dotting all the I's and crossing yeah. the T's and making sure everything is
100%. And that was the other thing is like when I started opening up about like, you know, we're waiting, it's kind of in this financial situation, all this, other people in the Portland area who have gone through surrogacy, I started having conversations with them and they were like, oh, I know a lawyer who does this for all of the gay couples in Portland, right. blah, blah, blah. Right. And I'm like, right. oh my God, I had yeah. no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, we call this queer drafting. You just use the folks that the person before you did. Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, okay, great. Like, yeah. you know, they've had very successful cases of surrogacy and that's amazing. And like, let's do what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. if any, like through this conversation, if anyone gets anything from this, like, I just want to say, you are capable of doing way more than you might think in this process. Mm-hmm. Like, you should feel empowered in your ability to do things for yourself in it and to do your research and to have those conversations and to find a gestational carrier if you want to. So yeah, I started posting on Facebook, got involved in a bunch of surrogacy groups. And within like a couple weeks, I had like dozens of inquiries.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, you also have, we haven't talked about this, but y'all have a insane social media presence. Like, you have a lot of followers, right? So people, you know, so people are watching your videos.
Yes. But I did, right? Like, and I'm kind of taking that with a little bit of caution because on social media. Sure. I don't know if I want necessarily like somebody who follows us on Instagram to, I don't know. It's a weird line where I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to like blend those boundaries or what's going on with that. And it's complicated in that sense. Mm-hmm. But on Facebook, I did it on my personal Facebook, like no following. Nobody knows who we are. I'm just putting mm-hmm. out our story on these random Facebook groups and then hopefully mm-hmm. resonates with somebody in our area.
Mm-hmm.
And right. like several people that I went to high school with that I haven't spoken to in years have reached out. And so currently we are like interviewing those people and trying to figure out if it's a match.
Mm-hmm.
So wow. we're just kind of like doing it ourselves a yeah. little bit.
I think there's so only light at the end of the tunnel. I'm not sure if we'll find somebody by the end of this year, right? You know, to mm-hmm. to do a transfer within this year. But potentially next year, I think is pretty feasible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll probably find that on our own.
Yeah.
Did you want to
okay,
talk
so
about
you have
the change
pivoted.
With that?
We pivoted a bit.
You pivoted. Uh-oh. Is there a new change? What's the wait? Oh dear, here we go. Exclusive.
Exclusive. Here it is.
We are planning, similar to what we just talked about, I think having interviewed so many people and looking at just the financial viability and again, just sort of taking ownership, we are choosing to drop our agency to mm-hmm. kind of go it alone. That's kind of a like nerve-wracking thing, but at the same time, there are costs, a cost savings in that, that I think will be worth the amount of time that we put into it. And most of the people that we know have done it that way. And I think, while if you go with an agency, there's no problems with that, it is a significant financial burden that I don't think we did our due diligence, or I don't know if we had the most realistic view of like what that would feel like when those dollars started shooting out the door.
Right.
And then, you know, you're however much we are into it and you're like, oh, we still have to pay for potentially health insurance for the gestational carrier, a lawyer, you know, compensate the gestational carrier for the pregnancy, medical bills when the children are here and all the mm-hmm. things that you need to have a baby and the things you need to buy for them and feed them. And I just think we got to a point where we're like, yes, we're very, very happy with having done IVF, at least having somewhat of a successful outcome with mm-hmm. five, right? When you look at the overall picture, five.
Like, that's amazing.
That's great.
Five embryos. Pretty incredible.
But there's a lot more things that are coming.
Yeah. You're like halfway there.
Right.
Yeah. Even if
right.
that. Yeah. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe. Are we?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a journey, but you're on it. You're yeah. on the roller coaster.
Yeah.
And in the end, everything's going to be okay. In the end, it's all going to work out. In the yes. end, everything's going to be okay. And just yeah. as it was meant to be. But you are in it right now.
Yes.
We just realized there's way more resources and support out there for us that we don't necessarily need to pay a lot of money mm-hmm. for. We have a lot more power to be able to do some of these things ourselves.
And we might need to do a sibling journey, you know, where saving 15,000 to 20,000 is going to help us, you know, continue to grow our family. Or maybe that, you know, our savings can go towards the adoption that we eventually would like to do or something like that. So it's just hard because it's a finite amount of things that you can. Your bank account is only full.
Yeah, if you're lucky enough to even, you know, have the yeah. bank account to start off no, with, right?
Exactly.
And you know all the steps now that the agency was going to take with the surrogate, like the mental health screening.
Correct.
And you know, so you know now, like you have kind of like a blueprint for what you have to do when choosing a surrogate.
We've at least gleaned some information. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you're better off than you were before, even though it might not seem that way, you know?
And good reminder. Thank you.
Yeah. You're on that journey. You are just on that journey and you'll find the folks that are meant to be there for you. You'll find them.
Yeah.
The lesson I'm learning from you, and I learned this so many times from so many guests on this show, like, keep an open mind. Don't be afraid of changes on the path, right? Don't be afraid to pivot. Also, you can take it one step at a time, especially on a journey like yours that has so many steps. You can go one, check one little box off at a time. And like, don't stress yourselves out over this huge big picture, because who knows where it's going to end up.
Totally.
You two are doing an amazing job.
Thanks,
stay strong, stay hopeful. You got this. I'm so excited for you.
I feel so much better than I did a few months ago. A few months ago, I was good. Like, I don't know if we're going to do this. Like, this is crazy. Like, I don't know. Like, we were freaking out. And now I'm like, we got this.
Yeah.
Good.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Dang. I love it. I love it.
It's hard, but you're doing the right stuff. And you started a podcast that everybody needs to go listen to.
Yes.
Right now.
Please.
Tell everybody at home where they can find your show. And then also, I already told you in the beginning of this episode, but you need to go listen to their interview with me, where I dropped some unknown information that y'all haven't heard yet.
Hot and spicy.
Yeah.
I am so excited to hear it.
I know.
That's a conversation that's going to happen.
They actually haven't interviewed me yet, so they don't
not
even
yet.
Know.
Yeah. And we only know the title of the book, you know? We don't know any of the details yet.
To dig into those chapters.
Yes.
Oh my God. But okay, so where can everybody find you? All the places.
They can find us at Michael and Matt on Instagram, at Michael and Matt 1 on TikTok, and Who's Your Daddy podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Or
available on all streaming platforms.
YouTube.com/Michael and Matt as well has all the full length videos. If you love watching
video
and how we like interact back and forth, or facial expressions, or you want to see
it's
our
a
guests
whole nother experience
talk.
That facial expression. Yep.
Yeah.
It's the best. It's the best. So go check them out. Go subscribe in all the places. We're all sending you like good baby juju. Good.
Thank you.
Gestational carrier juju.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
It's gonna happen.
It's good. I feel excited.
I feel it in the air.
Yeah. I have like a renowned excitement in this now.
Yes.
Oh, good. Good. It's going. It's happening.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.